What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And if you can't tell from my tone, I'm battling, I don't know if it's a cold, I don't know if it's a sickness of some sort, but I have just been all out of whack, you know, the nose is running, we're hawking up spit, it is not good, but we are still delivering weekly episodes, two episodes every week. I can pretty much like say with certain I've done two episodes every week for the last like 2 years straight, and this episode is no different, and we have a lot to talk about on today's episode. There's actually a segment I have to push to the next episode later in the week. But on today's episode, we will be recapping UFC 320. Was it the best pay-per-view of the year? It might have been. It might have been. We'll be recapping everything. We went 9-5 on predictions. So decent. And honestly, I feel like I should have done better. We'll be talking about what's next for each and every fighter and what went down in every fight on today's episode. As well, recapping week 5 of the NFL season. Of course, Monday Night Football still has to go down. Chiefs and Jags. If the Jaguars defense gets 25 points, I'll win my fantasy football matchup in my 16-man league. Do we think the Jacksonville defense can get 25 points? That would be probably something that will never happen. But we can dream of happening. We also have a bunch of new UFC fights. Dana White's Contender Series 9.9, Season 9, Episode 9, Predictions. That's right, only two episodes left. The second to last episode, we will be recapped on today. Or not recapped, it will be predicted on today's episode because there's a lot of good fights that are going to be going down. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I say we just dive right on into it with some new UFC fights. And basically, all these fights are from the same card because they have announced the entire UFC Qatar to an extent. We already knew a couple fights, but we have a bunch of bangers on UFC Qatar going down November 22nd at ABHA. A-B-H-A, Abha Arena in Doha, Qatar, which I don't really know much about Qatar, but from what I've been hearing, it's actually a hotspot for activities in the global politics scheme of things. So maybe the USA is going here and putting on a 10 out of 10 fight night to try and ease over relations with the natives of the land. I don't know, but one of the first fights that we have to talk about with you guys today, these are in no particular order, but I'm going to save the main event and co-main event for last. We have the number 9 ranked Volkan Ozdemir in the men's light heavyweight division taking on the number 14th ranked Atomic Alonzo Menifield. That's right. Alonzo Menifield back again after ending the undefeated streak of Omar Sayan. As for Volkan Ozdemir, I don't even remember the last time I've seen this guy. Genuinely, I have no idea. I think the last time we saw him fight, Carlos Ubrick was winning a boring unanimous decision over him. But Volkan Ozdemir, he's 8-7 in the UFC. Alonzo Menifield is 8-5-1. And you'd be like kind of shocked to know Alonzo Menifield coming into this will be 38 years old. I find that utterly insane. And not doing much better. Volkan will be 36. So these guys are headed to the later stages of their career. Now, mind you, Glover Teixeira was in his 40s. Kyle Blachowicz almost 40 when they won the light heavyweight championship. So it's never too late to make a run. But being ranked 9-14, whoever wins this will be poised for a top 10 matchup coming up next. I don't really know who I'd favor right off the bat. Alonzo Menifield always fights such a wild style. And as for Volkan Ozdemir, I mean, you never know what you're going to get with him. Sometimes he'll go out and knock out Johnny Walker, other times he'll just stand there and get pieced up left, right, and center. So this is a great fight being added to UFC Qatar, and I'm excited to watch it. Another matchup being added, this one in the middleweight division, on the lesser side of things. Should be a good prelim fight, though. Ishmael Nurmagomedov is back. Did you know he's 3-3 at the UFC? I cannot believe that this guy has had 6 UFC fights. That would really shock me. He's from Austria, Morocco, and Russia, according to Big Marcel. He's been in all the countries. He'll be taking on the Ultimate Fighter Season 32 winner, Ryan Loder. Ryan is 1-1 in the UFC after he beat Robert Valentine, and I'm pretty sure they fed him to Osmat Bekov, who knocked him out in round number one. If I'm not mistaken, that's the fight that took place. But yeah, Ryan Loder coming in here representing the USA overseas. As for Ishmael, you know, he holds a win over Bruno Silva. That's about as good as you can get with some of his abilities. Good middleweight matchup though, and whoever wins this, hey, maybe you'll get a decent name next. Who knows? But good prelim matchup right here. Another good one, UFC Qatar. Tagir Ulebekov, the number 12 ranked flyweight, welcomes back to the UFC Kyoichi Horiguchi. Kyoichi went 7-1 in the UFC back in the early 2000s, back in the 2010s, I should say. And now he's returned You know, this man was a champion over at Bellator and Rizin, and now he's back here in the great United States of America, the organization known as the UFC, and he holds wins over Sergio Pettis, Kaya Sakura, which, by the way, Kaya Sakura win hasn't aged too good, as that guy clearly is not UFC caliber, but he's taken out to Tigerlan Bekov, who's been on an insane run, beating Alan Nasimoto, beating Cody Durden, and surviving a very entertaining fight with Azat Maksum. Tigera 17-2 professionally, Kayuchi 34-5 professionally. I don't know what to expect here. I'll have to watch a bit of footage and read up a bit more about Kayuchi, so thankfully I have a lot of time, but hey, dude's 34-5. We'll see if he can survive the Dagestani grappling of Tigerlan Bekov. But yeah, Ulan Bekov has a pretty straightforward game plan of just take you down. Oh, maybe if your neck's available, put in a guillotine or something. So, Kayuchi, though, world champion. He's coming in 34 years old. And as for Tagir, he is trying to do some math here. Oh, 33. So these two are pretty similar in age. Japan versus Russia. Ooh, we're going back to World War II. Moving on, another great prelim matchup here. Luke Riley makes his debut at featherweight. The 11-0 man from England, who was a big star over in Cage Warriors, is taking on Bogdan Grad in his UFC debut. Bogdan Grad, 15-3, is from Romania, and he has gone 1-1 in the UFC. Holds a win over Michael Aswell, I think it was, or maybe Lucas Alexander. I don't know, but hey, this one is high level. Luke Riley, like I said, 11-0, trains at Next Gen MMA Liverpool. He has a lot of hype coming with him. I mean, people are saying Paddy Pimblett, Tom Aspinall levels in terms of the featherweight division, and if you're coming in undefeated, you best be ready to bring it, and I think Bogdan Grad is an excellent test for a newcomer coming into his first fight in the UFC. Next fight added to this UFC Qatar card comes to you from the bantamweight division, and we have the return of Alexander Topuria. That's right, the 6-1 younger brother of Ia Topuria. I believe he's younger. I can't recall. He was either older or younger, and they're around the same age, but won his debut over Colby Thickneys, and after watching Colby Thickneys dominate Josias Musasa, I can say that's a solid win to his run. But Topuria taking on a tough man, his debut, the 2-0 warrior, the 12-2, 1-1 in the UFC, Behzad Ali-Makan. And Behzad Ali-Makan lost his debut to Umar Nurmagomedov. That's right, they gave this guy Umar Nurmagomedov his debut, and Umar couldn't put him away. Then, next time out, took on Brad Katona in Canada and starched him in a minute. So, this is super high level, and I am super excited to see this one man from Kazakhstan, one man from Georgia/Spain. I mean, this is going to be fantastic, and I don't know what to expect. I really don't, because Topuria took a very just kind of run-of-the-mill grappling style, outboxing Colby Thickneys, like looked better everywhere over him, but didn't get him out of there. And as for Ali-Makan, in the opening seconds in the Umar Nurmagomedov fight, dropped him, did proceed to get out-grappled brutally the next 14 minutes of the fight, but came out, knocked out a guy in Brad Katona, who historically has had a decent chin, so I'll be curious to see how this fight takes place, how it goes. These two are in their prime, and no better place to sell this than in Qatar. Now, let's get into our co-main event and main event, because these are the two big fights that have been announced for UFC Qatar. First up, the co-main event, as the number one ranked welterweight, Bilal Muhammad, is back to take on the number six ranked Ian Machado. Gary, what a random fight. Of all the welterweight matchups they could have made, this was not on my bingo card. This was just not what I had in mind. I figured Bilal would take on Shavkat, Ian Gary would take on Sean Brady, but no. No, with word that Shavkat's injured, with word Sean Brady might be taking on Kamaru Usman, here we have Bilal Muhammad taking on Ian Gary. So do any of us win? One of these guys is going to win. So I just feel like we are all at a loss here. But Bilal Muhammad, fresh off of his loss to Jack Della Maddalena in one of the better title fights of 2025. And other than that, I mean, holds wins over Gilbert Burns, Stephen Thompson, Leon Edwards. He's 15-4 with a no contest in the UFC. So he is shooting for his 21st fight here. And with a 24-4 record with that no contest, this will be his 30th professional fight, which is very exciting, if you ask me. Bilal Muhammad has 2 performance of the nights and 2 fight of the nights on his UFC resume. Good for him. But yes, other than that, Bilal Muhammad isn't the most entertaining of fighters. He's repping Palestine. He's coming in, and he's taking on a man, and Ian Gary, who, by the way, has had a decent year. He knocked off Carlos Prates in a main event. He's 16-1, and that one loss is a close decision to Shavkat Rakhmonov. I mean, Ian Garry, happy to see him. And the fact that if Ian Garry wins this, which, by the way, I am so tempted to pick him to win this, he'd be ranked number one at welterweight. Oh, it'd be so good. It would be so good. But yeah, Ian Garry, 16-1. Wow, isn't it crazy? He's already had 10 fights in the UFC. This will be his 11th fight. I find this fantastic. This is also a perfect fight where if the main event doesn't come through, you can easily bump this up to 5 rounds in a main event spot. But yeah, as of right now, I believe it's 3 rounds. It's not listed as a 5-round co-main event, but this is a fantastic co-main event for a card. But now, the main event of UFC Qatar, ladies and gentlemen, we head to the lightweight division, as the number 2 ranked Armin Sarukian is back to take on the number 6 ranked Dan the Hangman Hooker. It has been so long since we've seen these guys fight. Did you know the last time Armin Sarukian fought was at UFC 300? The last time this man picked up a win was Charles Oliveira, April 2024. He was linked to a title fight in January against Islam Makhachev and had to pull out of the fight literally hours before. It was ridiculous. And as for Dan Hooker, he's no better. His last win, August 2024. Against Matheus Gamrot. So both these boys have been out of commission for a while. It's about time we get these guys in a UFC fight, and especially in the main event, a massive opportunity here. All this lets me know, really, is that Paddy Pimblett or Justin Gaethje is fighting next for the lightweight championship. This is such a telltale of what they're doing next at lightweight. I am buzzing to see what the next moves are. But yeah, Armin coming in ranked number 2. He's 22-3 professionally, 9-2. He's from Armenia, so close to Qatar to an extent. And as for the New Zealander, Dan Hooker, 14-8 is his UFC record, 24-12 professional record. I think we all just expect Armin to go out there and destroy Dan Hooker, but don't count out Dan the Hangman Hooker, man. He is tough. And there was at one point he was getting kicked from the UFC rankings. He's worked his way back all the way to the number 6 spot. He has earned this main event opportunity, and I will be excited to see it take place. But yes, those are all your new UFC fights that are all on Qatar. So basically, here's your UFC Qatar preview. I shouldn't even call this new UFC fights, but it's just all UFC Qatar fights. But yeah, super exciting, and we'll be back with more fights every single episode. But speaking of fights, have you heard of Dana White's Contender Series? That is right. We've been talking about it all season long, except for the first episode when I literally forgot that it was coming back. But we're now on episode 9. Of season 9, that's right, guys. The season is coming to an end, and we have our second to last episode right here. 5 new fights, lots of action. Let's drop our predictions. We've been pretty good overall predicting all season. I'm sure I could go back and tally all that I have, but as of right now, I have not been keeping actual track of my predictions that well. So without further ado, let's dive into it and analyze what could be 5 new people in the UFC. First up, the men's light heavyweight division, and we have Luke Fernandez taking on Rafael, oh man, stay with me now, Pergantino. I think I nailed that, actually. Luke Fernandez coming in minus 770. Rafael Pergantino, wow, I suck at his name, plus 475. Massive underdog here. Holy cow, I didn't even realize how big of a favorite he was. Luke Fernandez coming in here, 6'1". Rafael also 6'1". Both men have a 76-inch reach. Both men stay in the orthodox position. These two are size-wise exactly the same. Fernandez, let's start with him. 30 years old. He's from New Jersey. And of his 5 wins, he has 4 KOs. He also had a 6-0 amateur career, so he has had some fight experience overall. This man has also gone 3-0 in grappling, beating Eric Anders, and most recently in, I believe it was July, Phil Hawes. He's actually your current CFFC Cage Fury Fighting Championship champion, and his last win came in May. So this man's picking up grappling wins over former UFC vets. This man's winning championship belts this year. Luke Fernandez, big prospect coming in, and you know we love light heavyweights. We love light heavyweights over here, and they always seem to deliver the best Dana's Contender Series finishes. I swear they always deliver on these fights. So we'll see if two can tango properly as Rafael Pergantino steps across from Luke Fernandez. This kid's 23 years old. from Brazil, 100% finish rate, 3 KOs and 2 subs with his 5-0 record. And of his 5 wins, 4 have came in round number 1. His last win was in May, and yeah, now he's stepping back into here. I will say, just off of images alone, Luke Fernandez looks like he would massacre Rafael Pergantino, but hey, they're giving him a shot. You know, he's actually ranked as the 829th best MMA fighter in Central America. That's a little fun fact for you. Now, as for Luke Fernandez, he's ranked as the number 2 light heavyweight in the U.S. Northeast. What a random thing that Tapology does, ranking people like that. But yeah, on my pre-scouting report, I decided to go with Luke Fernandez, and nothing is going to change here, as I am also going to ride with Luke Fernandez easily outright, just from appearance alone. I know we shouldn't go off of appearance fully, but I mean, if you guys can see the imagery of these two, I mean, it is almost just so evident that Luke Fernandez is built for this, and I don't want to say that Rafael isn't, but yeah, Luke Fernandez, round one knockout, let's just book it. Following that up, we head to the men's middleweight division as Luis Felipe Diaz takes on Donovan Hedrick. Ooh, what fun names we have here coming into this one. Donovan minus 105, Luis Felipe Diaz minus 115. And we have a very experienced fighter here in Luis Felipe Diaz, as he is currently listed at 16-5 on UFCstats.com. Donovan Hedrick, 6-0. 1 inch in height for Donovan at 5'11 and 5'10 is a little bit of an advantage. Same for reach, 76-74. Both men are in the orthodox stance. 30 years old for Luis, 28 years old for Donovan. Yet another close matchup in terms of size-wise, which I like to see. I really do like to see it when there's not a massive advantage, but I always reference Iwo Baranowski, who was at such a height disadvantage and utterly destroyed his opponent, Ali, way back in, I believe it was episode 5 or 6. It wasn't too long ago, but yeah, coming to this one, Luis Felipe Diaz, 30 years old, from Brazil, currently on a 2-fight winning streak. Of his 16 wins, 14 finishes, 7 KOs, and 7 subs. And of his 5 defeats, he has been finished 3 times. He was actually supposed to fight last week against Jimmy Pace Jr., and then that fight fell apart. And then he was originally supposed to fight a different opponent on this episode. That fell apart, so now he has ended up with Donovan Hedrick. Luis's last win came in July of 2023. Oh my. Oh my goodness, this man has not fought in 2 years. And of his 16 wins, he has 9 of them in round number 1. Wow. I was unfamiliar with how long it had been since Luis Felipe had fought in a promotion. But yeah, coming in, last win was in July of 2023, and he got a 40-second rear naked chokehold. Good for him. So we'll see how he does. We'll see if he can pull this together as he takes on the man, stepping in on short notice, Donovan Hedrick. And Donovan, coming in, 28 years old from Florida, 5 KOs and 1 sub, give him a 100% finish rate. All of those wins coming in round number 1. In fact, the longest fight of his career has been 2 minutes and 48 seconds. And I do want to say, his opponent's records have not been that good. He has not really fought the best level of competition, and props to him for getting an opportunity like this, but I gotta go with Luis Felipe Diaz. I just feel that the experience level here, I know he's been out of the game for 2 years, but he has a fighting experience. And I have seen guys take longer times of period off and come back and look even more dominant. So Luis Felipe Diaz, that's who we will ride with in this one. But Donovan Hedrick, he's a fast starter. Like I said, the longest time he's ever been in a UFC octagon, or not even the UFC, but an MMA ring octagon, 2 minutes, 48 seconds. So this man has never had an MMA fight over 3 minutes. And I think if it goes over that, Luis Felipe Diaz should overpower him and get a win. So I will go with a round 1 submission for Luis Felipe Diaz in the 4 to 5 minute range. After that, we head to the men's flyweight division as Emmanuel Heman Rodriguez takes on Roque Conceicao. Ooh, I like the names here, gentlemen. Very, very fun, very festive. Emmanuel coming in minus 260, Roque +205. Emmanuel, 25 years old, from Mexico, has 4 KOs and 1 sub. Of his 5 wins, a 100% finishing rate, in case you were curious. He has gone 1-1 on The Ultimate Fighter, which was the last time he fought in under a promotion. That's right, Emmanuel Rodriguez is coming from this past season of The Ultimate Fighter, and he actually lost a split decision to the man who won, Joseph Morales. Just to give you a little fun fact. Oh, and size-wise, these two are literally both 5'4", 64 inch reach. Like, these two are very similar. So, Emmanuel, coming from this past season of The Ultimate Fighter, appears to be pretty good. You know, I'll say that. I mean, 25 is young, and he's about a month older than his opponent, actually, in Roque Jr., who's also 25. He's on a 3-fight winning streak, hailing from Brazil. Of his 10 wins, he has 9 finishes, 8 KOs, and 1 sub. His last win came in March, which was actually the same time Emmanuel Rodriguez fought on The Ultimate Fighter. So, both these guys haven't fought since earlier in the year. Both guys are pretty similar size-wise. I don't really know who to go with here. I don't really know. It's pretty tricky. Emmanuel Rodriguez, I will say, you know, having gone on The Ultimate Fighter, having actually gotten a round 1 TKO on The Ultimate Fighter is super impressive, especially the fact he has a 100% finishing rate. Yeah, I could definitely get behind him. And as for Roque, I don't want to trash him. I mean, the man has 9 of his 10 wins by finish, but he necessarily hasn't fought anywhere outside of the UFC that's super high caliber. I'll say none of his opponents have had a negative record besides, like, the first 3 guys he fought. But other than that, his lone career loss is to a guy who's 20-6. Actually, he lost a split decision earlier when he was coming up in 2020. But that's 3 guys he's beaten, 7-0 record, 4-0 record, and 10-4 record. This one's pretty 50-50. I think the minus 260 is a bit skewed, which is why I maybe wouldn't go with Manny Rodriguez. But just because he's fought on The Ultimate Fighter, we'll throw him a bone and we'll go with Emmanuel Rodriguez. Why not? Why not go with him, giving Mexico another good fighter. Now, let's get into our second to last matchup of the evening, and this one is probably my fight of the night. This one is the one I have circled. This is what I'm excited for, as we have Adrian Luna Martinetti taking on Mark Vologdin, and this one is fantastic. Bantamweight division, plus 110 for the 16-1 Adrian Luna Martinetti, minus 130 for the 12-3-1 Mark Vologdin. And this one, Ecuador versus Dagestan. It don't get much better than this. No, it does not. I do want to point out one thing. Adrian Martinetti, 5'8", at 5'3", Mark Vologdin has to be the shortest bantamweight I've ever seen. Adrian also has a 6-inch reach advantage, 71 inches to 65. That's nuts. Adrian, 30 years old. Mark, 25 years old. We'll start with Luna Martinetti. This guy is from Ecuador and currently rides a 14-fight winning streak. Of his 16 wins, he has 10 finishes, 4 KOs, and 6 subs. His last win came in March. Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. It's nuts having this much experience coming into the UFC on the Contender Series. This man's lone decision loss happened way back in 2017. Now, since I'd say around 2024, he's gone 3-0. So, 2 fights in 2024, had 1 lone fight in 2025, where the guy he beat was by injury. And I do want to say, like, his opponent's records are all over the place, all right? Some of these guys, 6-6, 6-2. 2-3, 9-12, 25-10 beating that guy, very impressive, 12-4, 13-10-1, 8-3, and the guy he beat last time out was making his MMA debut. So how is that fair, by the way? Jesus Flores making his MMA debut back in March has to take on a guy who's 15-1. I just don't think that makes much sense, but hey, coming in, lots of experience, coming out of Ecuador. We'll see how he does when he takes on the man from Dagestan, Mark Vologdin. Mark is 25 years young, from Dagestan, Russia, and is on a 7-fight winning streak. I actually don't know if he's from Dagestan, but he is from Russia. I guess I should group all Russians in the Dagestan group. Currently trains out of All Stars in Sweden. Know who also trains there? Guram Kunladze, Alexander Gustafsson, and your current men's middleweight champion, Khamzat Chimaev. Of his 12 wins, 10 finishes, 6 KOs, and 4 subs. His last win came in June. Ooh, good for you, Mark, getting it done. But yeah, of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. That was way back in his first ever fight back in 2020. Since then, been on a tear. Got an arm triangle choke in June. Got a TKO in round 1 back in October. I mean, guys had some stellar competition levels too. 7-4 opponent's record, 8-6, 6-5, 9-4, 6-5. So 16-1 is certainly going to be a tough test, especially at a size disadvantage. I don't really like Mark Flogden in this one, but I don't know. Something's telling me that Mark's going to get it done. I don't know what it is. I really don't. Adrian just has this look to him, super impressive. But I don't know if he's really fought anyone that's given him a run for his money, per se. And I don't like the fact that he fought a guy who was making his debut with this guy's 15-1. So we're going to go with Mark Vlogden here. He is the favorite, which I don't think he should be like a big favorite in this whatsoever. So just pay attention to the odds, but I am going to go with Mark Vlogden. This is the fight I'm most curious to watch on Tuesday, and I will be locked in to that one. Now, let's get into the main event. This is why I was mentioning Dagestan, because the guy in the main event, Magomed Zainokuav, is 7-0 from Russia, and his opponent, Lucas Caldas, is 6-1, fighting out of Brazil. 5'10 to 5'8, 2 inches in height for Magomed, 2 inches in reach for Lucas, 70-68. Orthodox stance for both men, one's 29, one's 30. This is excellent matchmaking. And Magomed's nickname is Wild Chanko. I have no idea what Chanko means, so if it's a slur, don't come at me whatsoever. Lucas, coming into this one, is the plus 340 underdog against the minus 470 Magomed Zainokuav. We'll start with Lucas, though. Alrighty, Lucas, coming in from Brazil, coming off of one win. Alrighty, you know, he's coming off of one win, and the only reason that he lost is because he got a DQ for some illegal stops he had on his opponent back in March. His last win did come in May, where he got a 3-minute knockout in, whatever, Chuto Brazil, whatever the promotion was. All of his wins have came in round number one, and he even has multiple knockouts in round one with under 20 seconds left. In fact, two under 10 seconds left. Very impressive. He lost a Muay Thai fight back in 2022, won a kickboxing fight back in 2021. This guy lives and breathes MMA overall. And yeah, he looks well-rounded. He looks well-built from the image I can see here. He appears to be pretty good. Unfortunately, he's fighting a man who, as I mistakenly was saying Mark was this man, Magomed Zainokuav, is from Dagestan, Russia, and is part of that crew. That is right, 30 years old, from Dagestan. Of his 7 wins, he has 5 KOs. And I do want to say, all of his wins had been by KO until he arrived at UAE Warriors, won a fight in July last year, and won a fight this year in February, both of them decisions. Now, another noticeable thing, all of Magomed's opponents haven't had negative records. When he was 3-0, he beat a guy who was 9-4. When he was 5-0, beat a guy who was 6-2-1. Last time out, beat a guy who was 7-0. So, do want to say, Magomed coming in looking very good. Out of both of these fights, I'm talking main event and co-main event, I like Adrian Luna Martinetti over the Russian much better, but here, I gotta ride with Magomed Zainokuav. I know Lucas Caldas looks good, especially at plus 340. I say hammer him, but there's just something about Magomed which I like. Plus, I feel like it's always a better bet to pick the Dagestanis over anyone else. Dagestanis just always seem to squeak away with some wins here. But yeah, there should be another good episode of the Contender Series. Last week's wasn't as good. You know, I'll say last week's was a bit more dull compared to the past ones we've had, but nonetheless, wasn't awful. Nothing could be as bad as episode one of this season. This episode one was terrible, but it did give us the official coming out of Bosnjer Susukarev, who is easily the best fighter to come from this season so far. So, yeah, going with Luke Fernandez, Luis Felipe Diaz, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Mark Vlogden, and Magomed Zainokuav. Day West Contender Series 9.9 should be another good one. Now, with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break from the MMA to talk about the NFL, because Week 5 recently went down. We had a bunch of results take place. My Minnesota Vikings won. I think I'm going to go 3-3 in fantasy. A lot has taken place. Let's talk about each and every matchup and the top three fantasy performances for each team. Kicking off Week 5, we were in Los Angeles. That was right, the Rams taking on the 49ers, and To my surprise, this 49ers team clearly doesn't need any of their starters because they somehow beat the Rams 26-23 and even win on a last-second field goal. Not even last-second field goal. They scored with like 6 minutes left to put them up, and defense just clutched up and was able to beat the Rams. I mean, it was a pretty impressive performance overall for the 49ers, and McCaffrey, 27.9 fantasy points in a very regular PPR league. Could be more for your league. Kendrick Bourne, great waiver wire pickup this week, 24 fantasy points. And Mac Jones, oh my goodness, I picked up Bryce Young instead of Mac Jones, and Mac Jones put up 22. Bryce Young or whatever the freaking Panthers QB's name is, he only put up 12. For the Rams, though, Kyren Williams, 31.1, one of the best fantasy performances of the week. Matt Stafford, 25, and Puka Nacua, 24.5. Dude's just an absolute animal. Mac Jones, 342 yards and 2 tutties, was a stud. McCaffrey, 22 rushes for 57 yards and 8 catches for 82 yards and a touchdown. Man, people are trying to say this guy isn't in his prime anymore. Jake Tongas caught the other touchdown for the 49ers, funny enough. And Kendrick Bourne, 10 catches, 142 yards. What a beauty. For the Rams, I mean, good performance overall despite losing. 389 yards for Stafford, 3 touchdowns. Kyren, 65 yards on the ground. He had, 8 catches, that's what it was, for 66 yards and 2 tutties. He caught 2 touchdowns. Puka Nacua, 10 catches, 85 yards and a tutty. And Devontae Adams, 5 catches, 88 yards. Also nabbed a touchdown. Good stuff for him. Looking at the rankings real quick. After week 5 for these teams, Rams 3-2. 49ers 4-1, and 49ers are currently tied for being the second best team in the league. Scratch that. We don't have any undefeated teams, do we? We have no undefeated teams after week number 5. How about that? I didn't realize that. They're actually tied for the number 1 team in the league. I guess it is. 49ers, best team in the NFC West. And the NFC West is going to be pretty good this year. I just have a feeling. Then we got into our final overseas trip for the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings win against the Browns 21-17 thanks to a legit last second, 25 seconds left on the clock, touchdown to my boy, Jordan Addison. Justin Jefferson gets 19 fantasy points, Jordan Addison 15, and Carson Wentz gets 14.74. Even Carson Wentz had more than Bryce Young. I hate you, Bryce Young. For the Browns, David Njoku had 18, Dylan Gabriel 16, and Quashawn Judkins had 13.8. And into halftime, it was 10-7. Vikings were losing, for goodness sakes, and even headed into the third quarter after we scored a touchdown with Jordan Mason, David Njoku answered with a touchdown, and fourth quarter was just a battle, 17-14 all the way, and then with the time winding down, Carson Wentz and Jordan Addison put us ahead. Carson Wentz, 236 yards and a touchdown. Cam Akers threw a freaking 32-yard trick play to Josh Oliver, of all people, to get a touchdown. How about that? Cam Akers, who's like running back number 4 on the depth chart, getting it done. Good for him. We had a lot of players rushing the ball this game. Max Brosmer got to try and rush the ball. Now he lost a yard, but he still got some touches out there, so good for him. Justin Jefferson, 7 catches, 123 yards. Jordan Addison, 5 catches, 41 yards at a tutty. And even TJ Hockenson had 6 catches for 38 yards. Good job to my Minnesota Vikings. Very happy for them. They're still third in the AFC North, but we have more wins than the Packers, although they do have one less loss, I should better say. But hey, with a point differential of plus 26, I like the Vikings odds for the rest of the year. As for the opponents, the Browns, they will fall to 1-4 in the AFC North, and I believe are tied for worst team in the league, as we also have no more winless teams. Actually, there is one winless team. We actually do have a worst team. We'll get to that in a bit, but Browns, overall, you know, Dylan Gabriel, 190 yards and 2 tutties. Quashawn Judkins ran for 110 yards. They didn't even look that bad. I just think the Vikings are that freaking good. Good job, Vikings, getting past the Browns, and we will leave Europe going 1-1 for the year. Then with that, we got into the 12 o'clock slate, and we kicked it off with the Texans and blowing out the Ravens 44-10. Now, quite how I thought the 49ers would be able to play well without their starters, I thought the Ravens would be able to survive without Lamar Jackson. And I guess Lamar Jackson makes up this whole team because they legit did nothing. 44-10. Their lone touchdown is a Derrick Henry one in the third. Other than that, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 touchdowns scored on them. That's utterly ridiculous. I'll tell you what else is ridiculous. The fact that I literally sprinted to the waiver wire once I found Lamar Jackson was injured, put in my request for CJ Stroud, and apparently someone else in my league was able to get him, which I was just so pissed about. CJ Stroud, 28 fantasy points. Kai Fairbairn, 18. Xavier Hutchinson, 16. Oh, that really riled me up. And for the Ravens, 12 for Zay Flowers, 9 for Derrick Henry, and 6 for DeAndre Hopkins. I think this Ravens team is going to have a very steady decline the rest of the year. But yeah, CJ Stroud, 244 yards and 4 tutties. This is the guy that everyone knows and loves. Nick Chubb, 61 yards and a tutty. And how about the utter just disaster that was Woody Marks this week in fantasy? 2.4 fantasy points, 24 yards rushing, 24 yards on 7 rushes. Just abysmal. Just abysmal. Everyone thought he was next up this year. And yeah, he just had one good game. He's not even the starter. Nick Chubb's the freaking starter. And then yeah, Xavier Hutchinson caught 2 tutties on 3 catches. Pretty average. Cooper Rush, 179 yards, 3 in picks. But he did go 14 of 20. So in all reality, only 3 of Cooper Rush's passes didn't land in a human being's hand. How about that? And actually, maybe we had some out of bounds catches too. Maybe Cooper Rush had a 100% completion thing and we're just looking at it from a weird lens. Derrick Henry, 15 rushes, 33 yards and a touchdown. Looked very washed this game. Zay Flowers, 5 catches, 72 yards. You do not deserve this, Zay Flowers. You do not deserve this whatsoever. But looking at our AFC rankings, Ravens are 1-4 despite having scored 141 points on the year and given up 177. Wow, the Ravens defense, I think, is legit the worst defense by a mile in this league. The next closest worst defense has given up 157, and they're the worst team in the league. Wow. Wow, that's insane. But Ravens 1-4, 3-game losing streak. Yeah, I don't know what to do. Y'all need Lamar back pronto. Now, as for the Texans, 2-3, 2-game winning streak, and they are looking to reclaim the AFC South. The AFC South playing pretty good this year. Only teams ahead of them, 3-1 Jags, and the soon to be talked about 4-1 Colts. Moving along, next game, Saints end their winless streak, beating the Giants. And yeah, it's starting to look like Jackson Dart just had a lucky week one, in my opinion. Giants drop this one 26-14 as the Saints pick up their first win of the year. Theo Johnson, 21 fantasy points, stud tight end for the Giants in this game. Jackson Dart gets 15, Cam Scadabo 14. For the Saints, you know, you love him. He's here. Rashid Shaheed, 21 fantasy points. Rashid Shaheed is always good for a couple 20-point games during the year. Other than that, he does absolutely nothing. Saints D had 18, and Spencer Rattler, who I also could have picked up instead of Bryce Young, put up 16 fantasy points. And, you know, to be fair, the game started off 14-7. Within the first quarter and 2 minutes of quarter two. I mean, so this was a complete shutout from there. The Saints defense coming up massive, just utterly massive, and nothing capped it off better than start off fourth quarter with an 86-yard fumble recovery. That is what made everything so much more funnier for the Saints team. And to do it at home, too, gotta feel good for the Saints. For the Giants, Jackson Dart threw 2 tutties, but also threw 2 picks. Scadabo ran for 59 yards. Dart ran for 55. Even Devin Singletary was able to get in 6 rushes for 20 yards. Good for him. Other than that, I mean, with Malik Nabers out, I mean, we're just going to have to see who takes over as, you know, the next big stud. Kip Scadabo caught 6 passes. Theo Johnson, of course, the tight end, caught 6 passes. Bellinger, the tight end, caught 4 passes. Slayton had 3 catches. Wandell Robinson, who you would think would be getting just all the targets, 5 catches, 30 yards. So Giants looking like the New York Giants of old. I don't really know. This team should be good, I feel. But I feel like without Malik, they don't have that, like, one other star piece. For the Saints, you know, who I forgot was in this team? Taysom Hill. Had a 19-yard pass. Did you know that? He also had 6 rushes for -1 yards. That's freaking insane. But he's back, and, you know, I'm sure he'll go off for 40 points one game, and he'll be the biggest waiver wire pickup of that week. Rattler goes for 225 yards and a touchdown, and also ran for 21 yards. But the star of the game, Rashid Shaheed, 4 catches, 114 yards, a tutty, was doing great. And even Olave, 7 catches, 59 yards. Good for him. And this was also an interesting game as Kendre Miller outrushed in yards and attempts Alvin Kamara. Are we seeing a changing of the guard? Is Alvin Kamara finally fading off? I don't know, but Saints, good for you. Pick up your first win of the year. As for the Giants, I don't know what to tell you guys. You got to figure it out and pronto. Next up, Broncos and Eagles. And if you want to see a bigger choke job than something you'll see on the hub, watch this game. Broncos beat the Eagles 21-17 after being down 17-3 heading into the fourth quarter. That is right. The game opens with the Broncos hitting a field goal. Broncos hit a field goal, 55-yarder, good job with Lutz. Then Jake Elliott, field goal. Touchdown in the second quarter to Dallas Goedert. Touchdown to the in the third quarter to Saquon Barkley. We then kick off the fourth. J.K. Dobbins punches in a final big drive, okay? We then go 6 minutes, nothing much going on, but then the Broncos lead a great drive after some, I'd say, very unfortunate penalties on the Eagles. You know, multiple illegal formations, multiple illegal lineup shifts, very odd. Then Evan Engram catches an 11-yard pass from Bo Nix, and then Troy Franklin catches a two-point conversion to put them up 18-17 over the Eagles. 6 minutes go by, Eagles can't do nothing. Will Lutz kicks in a game-winning field goal with a minute left. For the final drive, Eagles can't complete a single pass to save their lives. Broncos win 21-17 and probably the biggest win of their season so far. Broncos will improve to 3-2 and are now on a two-game winning streak. As for the Eagles, they're still the best team in the NFC East, probably the best team in the NFC in general. But yeah, this one was certainly a doozy and has shown some negative signs for the team. In terms of fantasy performances, Courtland Sutton had 17.9, Bo Nix 17.8, and J.K. Dobbins at 15.4. Jalen Hurts put up 19.5, Devontae Smith, my boy, 19.4, and Saquon Barkley 17.8. But yeah, this was just impressive all around for this Broncos team. Bo Nix, 240 yards and a touchdown, ran for 22 yards. J.K. Dobbins getting the ball 20 attempts on the ground, was able to put in a tutty, and those 8 catches of 99 yards for Sutton were so helpful. And did wash out my boy Devontae Smith. 8 catches, 114 yards. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Outpacing A.J. Brown. You know Devontae Smith is him. You know him. You know, and actually, I saw him. We're going to talk about that on the next podcast episode. Trust me there. But Saquon Barkley only attempted rushing the ball 6 times. Kind of ridiculous. This was an air raid for Jalen Hurts, going 22 of 38 for 208 yards and 2 touchdowns. But it wasn't enough as the Broncos get past the Eagles, which, when I think about it, if a Bronco and an Eagle were to engage in battle, I would probably pick a Bronco if he could just, like, stomp on the Eagle and get him. Yeah, that's what would probably happen in that scenario as well. Next up was the biggest offensive explosion that everyone was predicting this week as the Cowboys took on the Jets. And let me just say, everyone thought coming in this was going to be just an offensive explosion, and first half, nothing from the Jets. Jets are just shut down. It is 23-3 heading into halftime. It was awful. It was utterly awful. And then out of nowhere, you know, Jets decide to rally, but they rally too late and lose 37-22. They tried. They really tried, you know, multiple two-point conversions on 2 touchdowns, but just too little too late after starting so poorly. So with that, the Cowboys improved to 2-2 with a draw, might I add. And you know what? They're looking to turn their season around. And as for the Jets, they're 0-5 and are the worst team in the league. It doesn't even make sense. This Jets team doesn't even feel like the worst team in the league, and yet they somehow are. It's funny how that works out. Jets are 0-5, and I'm curious when they're going to get their first win, if they are, of the season. In terms of fantasy performances, 28 points from Dak, 26 from Javonte Williams, and 23.9 from who I think is the best tight end currently in the league right now, Jake Ferguson. As for the Jets, 25 from Justin Fields, 19 for Garrett Wilson, and 17 from Michael Taylor. Good job. Good job, Michael Taylor. I think his name's Michael Taylor. I don't even know what his freaking name is. Who is Taylor? Who even is this Taylor guy? Is he a tight end? Tight end Taylor. M. Taylor. I have no idea what his name is. But he had 9 catches for 67 yards. Good for you, buddy. Fields, 283 yards, 2 tutties. Rushed for 26. Good for him. Breece Hall ran for 113 yards. Garrett Wilson, 6 catches, 7 yards, and a tutty. Good for him. Now, as for the Cowboys, this is the Cowboys team that America appears to love. America's team, 237 yards, 4 tutties for Dak Prescott. Javonte, 135 yards a tutty. He was killing it. Jake the Snake Ferguson, 7 catches, 49 yards, 2 tutties. Flurney the wide receiver, 6 catches, 114 yards. Wow. Pickens only had 2 catches, one of which was a big touchdown. And Javonte Williams had 1 little catch for a touchdown. Dominant stuff from the Cowboys, and I expect good stuff for this whole team as the rest of the year moves along. Now, next up, Raiders and Colts, and the Raiders suck. All right, Geno Smith is going to get benched soon. That's all I'm going to say. And, you know, for some reason, they took out my boy Ashton Jeanty in the fourth quarter. I understand we're being blown out, but wouldn't it be good to give him some reps or something? I don't know. Raiders fall to 1-4 and are on a 4-game losing streak. Colts are now 4-1 and are tied for best team, not only in the AFC, but in the entire freaking league. Ashton Jeanty, 15.9 fantasy points. Trey Tucker, 11. That's it. for the Colts. Now, as for the Raiders, Jonathan Taylor, 31.6, the best running back in the game right now. Daniel Jones, 16.68, kind of mediocre. And then Indianapolis defense had 16 points. But yeah, Jonathan Taylor absolutely murdering everyone. 66 yards, 3 touchdowns. The best performance of the day, Tyler Warren, 4 catches, 44 yards, a touchdown. He was looking good. Josh Downs, 6 catches, 54 yards. Josh Downs, you remember Josh Downs? We all thought he was going to be wide receiver 1 on this team. But yeah, this was just the domination from the Colts. It's crazy to think. Anthony Richardson came in, had 2 passing attempts. One was a 9-yard completion. Good for him. For the Raiders, Geno Smith, 228 yards and 2 picks. He looked awful. They only gave Ashton Jeanty the ball for 14 attempts for 67 yards. He also had 5 catches for 42 yards. When he had the ball, the team was looking good. When they weren't giving him the ball, they didn't look good. And thanks to you, Raiders coach, I'm now going to be 2-3 in my season. But he's actually not the player I want to blame for going to be 2-3 in my big 16-man league. It's this man, the man who somehow led the Panthers on a comeback, Bryce freaking Young, as the Panthers beat the Dolphins 27-24. Now, we predicted this. Now, I'm very happy I predicted this. It shows that I know ball. Dolphins fall to 1-4 and would be the worst team in the league, have the Jets just failed to get a win. But the Panthers somehow have 2 wins on the year, both of them at home, and they somehow win this game against the Dolphins. No help to Bryce Young, though. Gosh, as you can tell, we have some Bryce Young beef here, and he may be my QB1 if frickin', what's his face, Lamar Jackson doesn't come back. But we start off the game rough, 17-0. 17-0 performance. You're seeing a pick from Bryce Young. He's doing absolutely jack squat. Fumbling the ball even, maybe. But then, out of nowhere, this Panthers team just decides to rally for 10 points with 3 minutes left in the second quarter. Kick off the third with a field goal, and then, you know what? They're coming in little confidence, 13-17. It's close. Then Rico Dowdle punches in a very clutch touchdown. But then Jaylen Waddle catches a 46-yard pass from Tua Tagovailoa. I love big catches in the NFL. Always exciting. And then with under 2 minutes left, Mitchell Evans, who is that? I have no idea. Catches a 4-yard pass from Bryce Young to give the Panthers a lead, and their defense holds strong to give them the win. But the biggest star of the day, maybe the biggest star of the weekend, Rico Dowdle stepping in for Chuba Hubbard, 32 fantasy points. What a beauty. Jaylen Waddle at 23, Tua Tagovailoa at 22, and Darren Waller on my bench, 18.8 fantasy points. Thank you so much, Darren. Thank you. Tatorian McMillan for the Panthers at 13, and Bryce Young had freaking 12. Bryce, I was expecting a 27 bomb from you. What happened? What freaking happened? Tua, 256 yards and 3 tutties. Didn't even play bad, to be honest. I will say, this Panthers defense knows how to shut down the run. I have no idea where they got good at shutting down the run, but they have terrible safeties and quarterbacks, but they're a front line. Amazing, amazing. Holding this Dolphins team with Devin Achane and Ollie Gordon to a whopping 16 plus 5 minus 2, 19. 19 freaking yards running on the game. That's insane. That really is. Jaylen Waddle, 6 catches, 110 yards and a tutty. Darren Waller, 5 catches, 78 yards and a tutty. Devin Achane, 6 catches, 30 yards and a touchdown. Now on to the Panthers. Bryce Young, 198 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. And he also tried to run the ball and only got 0.1 points. 1 yard, 1 yard. Bryce Young, you got the win, but at what cost? My fantasy team. That's the cost. Let's talk about easily the player of the week, Rico Dowdle. 23 rushes, 206 yards, and a touchdown. That's insane. He also had 3 catches for 28 yards. Wow. Panthers are 2-3. Dolphins are 1-4. And yeah, Rico Dowdle, props to you, my boy. Very impressive. Then what may have been game of the week. I mean, this was super entertaining. I actually have another game of the week. But Buccaneers beat the Seahawks 38-35. And Emeka Egbuka cooks me. That's right. I had him in a league, which helped me, but I also played him in a league, which I really want to win in, and unfortunately, he did amazing. Emeka Egbuka, the best rookie of this entire draft class so far. Draft class. 31.3 fantasy points for the Bucs. Baker at 26. Rashad White, 23. Remember when Rashad White was going to be the next big thing? Yeah, I drafted him last year, and he absolutely sucked, and now he's good. Buccaneers are 4-1 and are the best team in the AFC South, and if you're 4-1 right now, you're also tied for being the best team in the National Football League. As for the Seahawks, they fall to 3-2, but honestly, aren't that bad. Sam Darnold, 27 fantasy points. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who I love, 27 fantasy points. And the tight end, Barner. A. Barner. What's his name? A.J. Barner is his name. 24 fantasy points. Good for him. Close game the entire way, just going back and forth with field goal, touchdown, 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 extra point, touchdown, 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 game winner from Chase McLaughlin. Wow, what a game. What a very entertaining game. For the Bucs, Baker, 379 yards and two tutties. Wowza. Rashad White, 41 yards on the ground for two touchdowns and also had four catches for 30 yards. But Emeka Egbuka, seven catches, 163 yards and a touchdown. Man, that kid is going places. For Seattle, Darnold throws for 341 yards, four touchdowns, and a crucial pick. Kenneth Walker, 86 yards on the ground, and his lone touchdown is stolen from Charbonnet, who also had nine rushes compared to the 10 for Kenneth, and he gets a touchdown. JSN, eight catches, 132 yards, a touchdown. Good work for him. Troy Horton caught a touchdown. Cooper Kupp had six catches for 59 yards. It's not too bad. But yeah, Bucks pull away. Get it done. And yeah, it was an entertaining game, top to bottom. But your easily worst team of the week was the Cardinals, who choked a 21-3 lead to the Titans. This was hilarious. This was easily one of the funniest things to come out of this week, as this team easily goes up 21-7 in the first, I want to say, 20 minutes of the game. You know, first quarter, it starts out 14-3. They score on the first drive. It was impressive. Then they open up the second quarter with a touchdown for Bam Knight. Mind you, this is in Arizona. They're the hometown team. Second quarter, halfway through, Joyce Sly kicks field goal, 21-6. Heading into halftime, nothing happens in the third. Nothing happens. We then enter the fourth quarter. Tony Pollard gets a touchdown to kick it off. Joey Sly misses the extra point. Very embarrassing. Very embarrassing, Joey Sly. We then watch Cam Ward throw a pass. It's picked off by the Cardinals. The Cardinals then fumble it after picking it off. Tyler Lockett then picks it up in the end zone, and the Titans have tied the game almost. But then, right now, it's 19-21, alrighty, and Joey Sly lines up for a little chipper 29-yarder, and the Titans win the first game of the year over the Cardinals, 22-21. This Cardinals team is so bad. I knew they were frauds this whole year. They are so, so bad. Good job to Cam Ward, leading not only the first win of his career, but a comeback win at that on the road. You got to love it. Calvin Ridley, 18 fantasy points, Tony Pollard, 14, and Joey Sly, 13. Michael Connor at 18 for the Cardinals, Kyler Murray at 15, and Marvin Harrison at 13.8. Cam Ward, 265 yards and a pick. That won't do it, Cam. He also rushed five attempts for negative 6 yards. Wow. Not very good when I look at that, but oh well. Tony Pollard, 67 yards and a tutty. Calvin Ridley, five catches, 131 yards. Props to the Titans defense. That's all I'm going to say. For Arizona, Kyler Murray, 220 yards. That's it. Denver Cardo also fumbled the ball at the goal line. That's now happened twice in 2 weeks in the NFL. What is going on? It happens once, all that's on. It happens twice. Oh, isn't that kind of freaky? Denver Cardo, three rushes, 81 yards, and he fumbled it at the goal line. Hilarious. Knight, what's his name? I can't remember his... Bam Knight. Bam Knight ran in a touchdown for the Cardinals. So did Michael Carter. So did Kyler Murray. Good stuff there. Trey McBride, five catches, 41 yards. Michael Carter, five catches, 22 yards. Marvin Harrison, four catches, 98 yards. He needs a new team. Marvin Harrison Jr. needs to get out of Arizona because their team is so bad that they are losing a clearly winnable game against the Titans, especially when they go up 21-3, and I'm sure all the home fans are like, oh my gosh, we're going to have a massive blowout. This is amazing. And then they proceed to not score the rest of the game. That's hilarious. A game I thought was going to be close, but clearly wasn't. Commanders beat the Chargers on the road 27-10. Wow. Wow, that's all I'm going to say. Commanders improved to 3-2, and as for the Chargers, they fall to 3-2, but are still the best team in the AFC West. Isn't that funny how that works? They're on a two-game losing streak, though. Chilling on my bench was Jackson Kroski Merritt, dropping 27 fantasy points. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it, man. My fantasy team, I'm clearly not a good manager. I'm clearly not meant to manage fantasy teams. I am 4-1 in the league, though. Just want to point that out. Deebo Samuel, 23. Jaden Daniels, 17 in his return game. For the Chargers, Ladd McConkey, 14. Justin Herbert, 14. Amari Hampton, 13. And what did frickin' the Quentin Johnson get? Only like 6 fantasy points. Why did no one pass to him, huh? Should have passed to Quentin Johnson, Justin Herbert. You absolute bum. But... yeah, similar scenario to this Cardinals game. 10-0 first quarter for the Chargers, and then they proceed to not score the rest of the game. 10 points given up in the second, 10 points given up in the third, and 7 points given up in the fourth. Well, right in the woes of the Chargers. Yeah, pretty pitiful performance. After the fourth quarter, they're like, yeah, we're done. We're just going to sit out the rest of the game. We don't care if we win or lose. Jaden Daniels, 231 yards and a touchdown. Good job for him. Jackson Kroski Merritt, 111 yards and two touchdowns, two catches, 39 yards. Just chilling on my bench with Darren Waller. Luke McCaffrey, one catch for 50 yards. Deebo Samuel, eight catches, 96 yards and a touchdown. Deebo Samuel is so good on the Commanders, and he's not getting injured either. Good job, Deebo. Very happy for you. I love seeing him on that receiver show on Netflix. For the Chargers, Trey Lance freaking came in at the end because Justin Herbert was just playing so piss poor. 166 yards, touchdown, and a pick. Nothing going for him. Herbert also ran the most yards this game with four rushes for 60 yards. That's random, if you ask me. Mari Hampton, 12 rushes, 44 yards. Nothing really going for him. Keenan Allen, 5 catches, 58 yards. Quentin Johnson, 4 catches, 40 yards. Ladd McConkey, 5 catches. I'm pissed about Quentin Johnson. Okay, we all get it. The Chargers freaking lost. And yeah, good job to the Commanders, though. But I might have to start Kroski Merritt this week. I have some tough decisions with my fantasy team. I don't know who to start and who to bench. I need to consult an expert or something. But I am the expert, as I've self-proclaimed on my Twitter. So now we run to a dilemma. Last game for the 3:30 slate. Lions beat the Bengals 37-24. And yeah, this was just a blowout from the beginning. Now, mind you, heading into halftime, only 14-3. But then out of nowhere, third quarter turns into 28-3. And then Ja'Marr Chase goes utterly ballistic for no reason for 29 fantasy points this game. I mean, was so random. Jake Browning went off for 19. Jake Browning even had more than Bryce Young. Son of a gun. Iosova had 13. Sam Laporta, 20.2 fantasy points. I picked up in a league off the waiver wire. What? That's right. He put up a little 20 bomb for me. Jared Goff had 20. Dave Montgomery, 18. Good job overall for Detroit. Did you know Dave Montgomery threw a touchdown? David Montgomery threw a touchdown and ran in a touchdown. Oh, if only he'd have caught a touchdown to Montgomery. Oh, Montgomery had one catch for 6 yards. That's one of the rarest things you could ever have. I think McCaffrey's done it. Oh, man, that's super cool. Jahmyr Gibbs put on the back burner this game despite getting a touchdown, I believe. Isaac Tassala had a touchdown. Sam Laporta had a touchdown. Brock Wright had a touchdown. Everyone was getting touchdowns this game. Yeah. Yeah, Lions are freaking nasty. We know it. They are probably the best team in the league, if you ask me. They're 4-1, four-game winning streak. They are killing it. As for the Browns, without Joe Burrow, they look loster than the Ravens, man. They are 2-3, three-game losing streak. And I don't know what to tell you here. I honestly don't. But shout out to Ja'Marr Chase. 6 catches, 110 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was trying his hardest here, especially when your quarterback, Jake Browning, throws 3 freaking picks. He didn't match him with 3 touchdowns, though. So, interesting. But then we get to my favorite pick of the week, the final game on Sunday, Sunday Night Football. Patriots beat the Bills 23-20, and we freaking called it. And I said in my group chat, they make bets every week. They said, we should run a parlay, blah, 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 blah. And I said, no, guys, Patriots are a lock. Patriots are the pick this week. Trust your boy, Zachary. No one trusted me. And with 15 seconds left, Andy Barrales nails a 52-yarder, and boom, the Patriots get it done. Bills lose their first game of the season at 4-1, and Patriots improved to 3-2 and are on a 2-game winning streak. Drake May, my boy, heck to the yeah. I called it. I freaking called it. No one believed me. Feels good, but also hurts at the same time. Stephon Diggs, 24 fantasy points. Ramondre Stevenson, 14.7. And the kicker, Andre Baroglis, 13 fantasy points. Josh Allen, good for 19. Dalton Kincaid had 16. And Khalil Shakir had 11. But yeah, I mean, Patriots start the game off 3-0, headed to halftime at 6-3 Pats. Curtis Samuel would nail a touchdown from the Bills to put them ahead. Then the Patriots would answer with Ramondre Stevenson getting back-to-back touchdowns. Keon Coleman would then get a touchdown pass for Matt Prater, tied the game up with a 45-yarder. But then, of course, the Patriots win it with 15 seconds left. Drake May, 273 yards. And, you know, very weird running day, if you ask me. Ramondre Stevenson on only 14 rushes, or only 14 yards on 7 rushes, 2 touchdowns. Pretty crazy how that works. Antonio Gibson suffers a season-ending ACL tear. That sucks. And Trey Henderson, 6 rushes, 24 yards. Not going to cut it. Stephon Diggs, 10 catches, 146 yards. Cooked his old team. I cannot wait till we are in New England. I feel like Stephon Diggs is going to eat. But, you know, honestly, he was at home in Buffalo, and it just showed in this game. For the Bills, Josh Allen, 253 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he did throw a pick. That's not going to cut it, Joshy. Kincaid is the stud of this game. 6 catches, 108 yards, but it's Keon Coleman and your boy Curtis Samuel who get the touchdowns. Yeah. Pats get it done. I'm not surprised. They were plus 380. I knew they were the best bet of the week. And everyone was like, oh, Zach, the Patriots aren't going to win. In fact, two of my boys were at the casino and placed money line bets on the Bills. I don't understand why no one trusts me. I know these things. I may miss on some things, but I nail a lot of the predictions I make. So, yeah, we still have Jaguars and Chiefs tonight. I don't really know what I want here. I hope Travis Etienne has a good game. I hope that the Jaguars defense gets 25 fantasy points. This can happen. The Vikings got 30 fantasy points, okay? I know the Jaguars can have just a ridiculous game and get it done. But, yeah, I don't really know what I want to happen. Hopefully the Chiefs win just so I can get my picks right. Honestly, I could care less what happens. Who cares? It doesn't matter. All I know is I hate Bryce Young, and I'm never buying a Bryce Young jersey in my life. If my future son becomes a diehard Carolina Panthers fan, he's like, Dad, Bryce Young is my hero. All I want in the world is a jersey. I'm going to crumple up his dreams right in front of him. That's what I can promise. See right there. But enough of this. Enough of this. The NFL Week 5 has since commenced in my book, and I'll tell you what else commenced and what was a fun time. UFC 320. Oh my goodness. I had an utter blast watching it. And I say, folks, let's talk about it. Opening up the card was, of course, our thrilling women's flyweight matchup between Veronica Hardy and Brogan Walker. And honestly, I was not surprised whatsoever with the result we had. Veronica Hardy wins 30-27 across the board. And yeah, anyone could have seen this coming. And one refreshing thing I will say was in the post-fight interview, Veronica Hardy said she felt like she had more opportunities to finish Brogan Walker and just wished she would have dialed into that killer instinct. And that's 100% right, because the amount of times she could have finished her were so many. Round one, almost locked in the submission. Round two, dropped her. And round three was just, almost just like coasting to a win. It was kind of pitiful, if you ask me. But yeah, Veronica Hardy gets the win and proves to a decent record of 10-5. And yeah, in her last five, she's 4-1. Overall UFC record, she is now 5-5. So hey, good for you, Veronica. Where does she go from here? Honestly, I have no idea. I really don't. There's always going to be people for her to face. I know that Karolina Kowalski has a fight coming up with Julia Pilastri. Maybe the winner of that takes on Veronica Hardy, but yeah, not really know. Decent win for her, gets it done. There's really not much to say. As for Brogan Walker, she's gone 0-3. She fought once in 2022, once in 2023, and now has fought once in 2025. She's 8-5. I think it's time Brogan Walker gets cut from the UFC. If they are going to bring her back, man, feed her someone from the Contender Series. That's all I'm going to say. Next up, welterweight division, Ramiz Brahavaj, Austin Manafort. And hey, Ramiz, my bad, bro, as Ramiz Brahavaj gets it done with a round two guillotine choke. In round one, all Austin Manafort is grappling him, is laying on some punches that look much harder than Ramiz, and clearly takes round number one. Ramiz, I don't know what to tell you. You were down. And then round two, Austin Manafort back on the attack, taking him down, controlling him, gets back up, takes him down again, isn't even striking. And then Ramiz just starts laying on some ground and pound while he's in, basically up against the cage with having his legs held, then locks in a guillotine choke, barely has it held in for even a little bit, which must tell me he has a tight hold. And Austin Manafort taps. Ramiz Brahavaj improves the 13-5, gets his 13th career finish. And yeah, three straight wins now, 2-0 in 2025. Both of them guillotine chokes, huh? What do you know? Very good work to Ramiz Brahavaj. And I think big things are ahead for the kid. I really am, Coming into this one, really needed the win at 33 years old of age. And yeah, good work for Brahavaj. As for Austin Manafort, that'll now put him at 1-1 in the UFC. And there's a lot more tests that you can give him. I think clearly we can see what his ceiling is with a fight like this, but there's a guy we're going to mention it a bit who picked up his third straight win, and I think that either Austin or Ramiz could take on Punahele Soriano, who we're going to mention in a bit. But other than that, Austin Manafort could always take on, Billy Ray Goff. He could take on Sam Patterson. Sam Patterson and Ramiz Brahavaj could also be a good fight. I don't know what's next. They really could send these guys up or down wherever they want to go. But great work to Ramiz Brahavaj getting the finish. And Austin Manafort kind of showing he's a one-dimensional fighter. Next up, men's bantamweight division, as Fareed Bashrat gets past Chris Gutierrez 28-29 on all judges' scorecards. Good work to Fareed Bashrat, as he'll improve to 14-0 undefeated. And he's even a very stellar 5-0 in the UFC. As far as the fight goes, 41 significant strikes to 31 in favor of Fareed, 61 total strikes to 56 in favor of Chris Gutierrez, 2-for-2 on takedowns for Fareed Bashran, 1-of-1 for Chris Gutierrez on takedowns as well. Round 1, takedown made the difference for deciding the round. For round 2, Fareed was able to piece him up on the feet, outstriking him 20-9. Round 3, Chris Gutierrez came alive, throwing some hard strikes, really trying to put him away, but Fareed wouldn't go down easy, is able to land a takedown to kind of save the fight for him, and he picks up the victory. Good job to Fareed Bashorat. So, Fareed, is he ready for the rankings? Maybe. I don't know. I saw a lot of people say, like, yeah, this guy's rankings ready. And as far as the rankings go, I could maybe give him Marcus McGee or Kyler Phillips, maybe even Rob Font. But in all reality, I think he needs to be tested maybe one more time. I'd like to see a Damon Blackshear. You know, Damon Blackshear's always a guy I feel who could prove as an interesting person. And by the way, those two fought in March of 2023, and this would be a good way to run it back. You know, you could always have him fight Davy Grant. Davy Grant's on a little two-fight winning streak, so I'll see what they elect to go with here, but definitely interested to see where Fareed Bashorat goes from here. As for Chris Gutierrez, this man is 34 years old. You know, he's been kind of average as of late. I mean, I don't know what his ceiling is. I think he's definitely going to be fighting downwards, per se. You know, there's a guy named Jacob Wickelox who recently picked up a win over Patchy Mix. We're going to mention that in a second. And hey, maybe the winner of that, maybe we do Patchy Mix versus Chris Gutierrez. Actually, Patchy Mix, Chris Gutierrez is the correct fight to make. Yeah, I'm going to reference that when we bring up that fight in just about like two or three more fights. So we'll get back to that, but Fareed Bashorat improves the 14-0. Good job to him. Next up, women's bantamweight division, and the women's bantamweight division makes no sense. It really doesn't, because first off, I thought Macy Chison won this fight. That's just me, but I didn't think that this isn't like a robbery or anything. This is nothing I'm going to write home about, but it's just wild to think that Yana Santos went from essentially almost getting booted from the rankings to now being ranked the number 5 women on the planet for the women's main division. That makes no sense here. But yeah, Yana Santos wins a 29-28 decision on all judges' scorecards to beat Nacy Chisholm. 65 significant strikes to 54 in favor of Yana Santos. 115-91 also in favor of Yana Santos. 2-of-3 on takedowns for Macy. Gets just under 4 minutes of control time. Did attempt a submission in round 3. It was nice to see someone actually try to finish the fight, for goodness sakes. But this was always a weird fight because round 1 went to Yana. Round 3 went to Macy. Round 2 was the swing round. And, you know, Macy landed a takedown in that round. I understand Yana outstruck her by 6 significantly and by 20 for total strike. But I don't know, in a very even round, when someone lands a takedown, it tends to sway me, so I don't really care, though. It kind of just sucks I predicted the fight wrong, but yeah, Yana Santos is now on a 3-fight winning streak, all of them boring decisions, and yeah, she's going to be ranked number 5 in the women's division. Who should she take on next? I don't know, Hockwell Pennington. How about that? Hockwell Pennington, Aileen Perez, Irene Aldana. I honestly don't care. I really don't care. She is 17-8, though, after being 14-8, so she's revived her career, but yeah, nothing interesting coming from Yana Santos. And that should say a lot more for Macy Chison, who is going to end her 2025 going 0-2 in just 2 brutal decisions to Kellen Vieira and Yana Santos. I think she's definitely going to be more in a gatekeeper position. I'm looking so at Jocelyn Edwards, Nora Cronale. They're ranked in the 12-14 range, maybe even Jacqueline Cavalcante at 11. She's going to be fighting down more. I don't think she'll be booted too far down the rankings, but losing to Yana Santos, I don't know, maybe you deserve to get booted. Macy Chison will fall to 11-5, and yeah, she's going to be fighting someone in the bottom 15 of the division. Dare I even say someone new coming into the company. After that, we were back in the men's welterweight division as Punahele Soriano dominated Nikola Veritinov to a unanimous decision. 12.5 minutes of control time. Utterly insane. Nikola did throw up 2 submission attempts in round number 3, but other than that, I mean, 39 submission strikes to 9 in favor of Soriano, 163 total strikes to 34, 4-of-11 on takedowns, 12 minutes, 35 seconds. Yeah, Punahele Soriano, pure and utter domination, 30-27s across the board. That'll do it for Nikola Veritinov in the UFC. 1-3, and never really amounted to much. So, yeah, I'm kind of done with Nikola in the UFC. I don't really know who he could even take on, if I'm being honest. You could feed him to Austin Vanderford, but in all honesty, I'd rather see Austin Vanderford take on Punahele Soriano. I know he also threw out the name Sam Patterson. He's another welterweight who's been on an absolute tear, and I think that would also be a fantastic matchup for Punahele, who, since moving down to welterweight, is 3-0. You know, middleweight didn't really treat him too kindly. He went to very unstellar 3-4, but now 3-0 at middleweight, 2-0 at 2025. Good stuff for Punahele Soriano. This grappling heavy style is winning him fights, but certainly not winning him fans. This was not entertaining whatsoever. So you have a guy 3-0 at welterweight, take out a guy in Ramiz or Sam Patterson, both of them also on winning streaks. That's what I think you should do next. And as for Nicola, he can join Brogan Walker in getting cut from the UFC. But yeah, at the end of the day, not much more to talk about there, folks. Punahele gets it done grappling. Yeah, kind of boring on the prelims. But then we got things going as Edmund Shahbazyan knocks out Andre Munoz with 2 seconds left in the round. This is now back-to-back fights for Andre Munoz where he has gotten finished with under 5 seconds left in round number one. But I mean, Edmund was just on the attack and he was hitting Andre super hard, and Andre got clipped really bad. He couldn't even hide it. Goes down, gets hit with some nasty ground and pound. He's eating elbows on elbows on elbows. I didn't know if Mark Smith was going to stop it, but he did. Edmund Shahbazyan, another win in a row, and he's now 16-5 with 15 finishes. This guy is an absolute animal. I really love this guy. Actually, I think it's 14 finishes, but he has like 13 KOs or something. He's on a roll. And by the way, 3-0 in 2025, one of your best fighters of the year. Heck yeah, 2 round 1 knockouts. Absolutely love this for Edmund Shahbazyan. He's also 4-1 in his last 5. Might as well sprinkle that in there. Since 2024, he has gone 4-1 in the company. Very good work. Edmund saving his career, and he's just about to enter his prime. I love it. I really do, Edmund. I'm excited to see what we do next with you, man. The middleweight division is such a deep division. You know, there's really unlimited things you can do in this division, and especially for a guy of Edmund's caliber, I know that he can go deep if he really pulls it all together. As for Andre Munoz, he has 8 career losses. All of them he's been finished in. 7 of them he's been knocked out in. He's currently 1-4 in his last 5. And after starting off his UFC career 5-0, looking so good, I think it's time he joins Nicola and Brogan on our cut counter. That's right, we're going to call getting cut from the UFC after an event the cut counter. That's what our, we're going to term that actually, the cut counter. I'm going to actually make sure that I copyright that so I can make some merch and get some money off of that. But yeah, Andre Munoz, tough luck, man. I mean, the guys he's lost to, Paul Craig, Brendan Allen, Akram Vox, Serafim Shabazi, not bad people at all, but yeah, happy, very happy for Edmund Shabazi. Getting the knockout, getting it done. Good work, Edmund. For middleweight, I don't know what to match make him with. I'm going to be honest. I could maybe see Abus Magomedov, but I feel like maybe not so much that level. We could always sprinkle him in against Roman Kopilov. Maybe Edmund Shahbazyan and Roman Kopilov. That'd be a fun striking affair, actually. Roman, Edmund, let's make it. Then we got into our next matchup, bantamweight division. Jacob Wilcox wins his debut against Patchy Mix. This was boring. This was bad. This wasn't entertaining. And another weird fight where Jacob wins round one, Patchy wins round three. It comes down to round two. It felt like Patchy had won. I think everyone kind of agreed, but they gave it to Jacob Wilcox. Was it a robbery? Maybe. Maybe, but something funny that happened every single round to open the fight, Jacob Wilcox jumped the guillotine. He literally locked in a guillotine at the start of every single round. And round one, that then resulted in Patchy Mix landing 2 takedowns. Round two, it resulted in Patchy Mix landing 2 takedowns. And round three, Patchy literally just avoided the guillotine, got back in the top position, and controlled for 4.5 minutes. So I don't know what to think of this. Jacob Wilcox's very inspiring debut. He is 17-3 with 2 draws, though. Like, he has a very stellar record. But we're talking about bantamweight division. That's why I think him versus Chris Gutierrez could be a good decision to go with here. Because, I mean, just nothing really exciting took place in this. And for Patchy Mix, coming over, having so much hype, being 20-1, Bellator champion, 15 finishes. He has since gone 0-2 in 2025 and left nothing to be. I would say little is something, nothing. He has left nothing to be desired here. So I think both these guys need to go back, need to kind of evaluate what they're going to do for Patchy. I think maybe Chris Gutierrez for Patchy. Now that I've officially thought about it, Chris Gutierrez versus Patchy Mix, I think should be the next option. For Jacob Wilcox, I mean, kid's still in his 20s. He's 28, I believe, 29. And the bantamweight division has lots of options. You know, when I look at some tough guys that he could potentially take on, we could throw him against Marcus McGee. you know, number 15 if we want to really give him a shot. But for now, I don't know. Boring prelim. Thank goodness it wasn't the headliner. It was whatever. It was whatever, just a grappling spree. I mean, Patchy landed 5 takedowns, 7 minutes, 41 seconds of control time. Jacob outstrikes him 46 to 37, 107 total strikes to 75. Yeah, kind of a doozy. But then we got into our next matchup, a catchweight bout between Jusei Yu and Daniel Santos. And Jusei Yu, you mother trucker, he gets knocked out in round number 2. And I hate to say it was deserved, but man, was it entertaining. Jusei Yu, who, by the way, had zero taunting in his debut against Jekasera guy, who just went out and knocked out Jekasera guy, was taunting Daniel Santos relentlessly in this fight while also keeping his arms down. And round one, Jusei Yu won. You know, Jusei Yu outstruck him 28 to 17, got taken down and was trolling him while he was being held down on the ground. But then round two opens up and Daniel Santos is just on the pressure, putting it at him, and eventually just clips him while throwing stuff. Jusei Yu goes down, is eating a bunch of ground and pound. Now, I understand he popped up right after the ref stepped in, but that's just because the ref pulled him off. You know, these shots were looking like they were hurting Jusei Yu. He kept dropping his face to the mat, and you gotta be freaking kidding me. Jusei Yu, I absolutely love you, but oh man, may as well call Daniel Santos the Korean killer, because he has now taken out 2 straight South Korean prospects in 2025. The win streak's at 4, 2-0 in 2025, and a big knockout here. Daniel Santos, watch out. I don't really know what weight class this guy even fights in. Is it featherweight? Is it lightweight? Can he make weight? I don't know, but Daniel Santos, good work for you. As for Jusei, suffers his first career defeat, and honestly, he deserved it. But now I'm worried Jusei is just going to, like, grapple guys. I'm worried that he's just going to be, like, scared to taunt. I don't know. Zombie Jr., fear not, because the Korean Zombie wasn't undefeated, and he still fought for multiple championships. So, with that, Daniel Santos gets it done. Kind of a comeback win in round number 3, in round number 2, but I don't know. I was so upset, Jusei, you got knocked out. But I was kind of just like, I was with my boy Ryan, and we're watching, we're like, no, Jusei, you deserved it, though. He kept taunting him relentlessly. So, Daniel Santos, 4 straight wins, 2-0 in 2025. He's going to do good things. And by the way, Charles Oliveira was in his corner, so you already know we're riding with Charles Oliveira this upcoming week at UFC Rio. With that, we got to our final prelim of the night, Ateba Gaudier taking on Treston Vines. Treston Vines stepping in on short notice for Ozzie Diaz, and yeah, this was a massacre. Ateba Gaudier utterly kills Treston Vines. I mean, this boy took him down for no reason, pops back up, then just starts lighting him up with punches. It only took 6 punches to knock out Treston Vines. I mean, this was a goofy, goofy fight. Only lasted 1 minute and 41 seconds. And yeah, Ateba Gaudier gets it done. This boy is now 3-0 in the UFC in 2025. All of them round one knockouts. I think he's my rookie of the year right now. You know, there hasn't really been like a Carlos Prates this year. But for Ateba Gaudier, 3-0, all round one knockouts. Gets another one here. Safe say it, I think he is my 2025 rookie of the year. Gotta give it to him. As for Treston Vines, you know, you got a shot. You took it on short notice. I think they might bring him back. You know, middleweight division, you can always have him fight one of the losers on this card. Andre Munez. How about, what's his face? Nikola Vertiev. I don't know. But yeah, Ateba Gaudier, utter massacre of Treston Vines. But hey, props to Vines for taking this fight. As what's next? For Ateba Gaudier, a big name. A big name indeed. I mean, we gotta see if this guy is as legit as they say. You know, people are calling him the middleweight Ngannou, but, you know, he's been fighting tin cans. So let's test him. Let's test him against someone. I'm trying to think of all the number of middleweights we could potentially throw at him. And there's a man, Michael Olakujasek, who's taking on Kyle Daukaus at UFC 322. And I think the winner or loser of that would be a great next opponent. That's what I think. We also have a guy named Robert Brzezik, who knocked out Brad Tavares at UFC Paris. I also think him. So I think Ateba Gaudier getting challenged against either one of those guys or 3 of those guys would be good options. But hey, great debut for Treston Vines getting knocked down 1:41. That was sarcasm. Poor Treston. Thank you for at least giving Ateba Gaudier another highlight to add to his highlight reel. With that, we got into the main card. And honestly, as I look at the main card, this probably was fight card of the year. 320 probably stole the show so far. Honestly, when I look back at, you know, 317, 311, we can find some flaws. This was amazing. We open it up, middleweight division, Joe Pyfer, Abus. Just Abus dominating Round one, Joe Piper was only able to land one significant strike. Other than that, Abus held him down, almost submitted him from the back, had 11 significant strikes to one, 16 total strikes to two. All I'm thinking is, like, dang, Joe Piper's about to get submitted right here, when then, all of a sudden, round two opens up, and Joe Piper drops Abus Magomedov. Abus is then scrambling. Joe Piper takes his back, locks in a rear naked choke, and gets his third career submission. I mean, what? Joe Piper, who are you? You absolute dog. That is right. Abus Magomedov dropped in the opening seconds of round two. His back is then taken, and then just about 90 seconds later, he is submitted. Joe Piper, three straight wins, 2-0 in 2025. Yeah. He's ready for another run at the rankings. He gets the performance bonus as well. This was fantastic to see. As for Abus Magomedov, three-fight winning streak is snapped, but buddy, you gotta lock in the submissions. He had Joe Piper, I kid you not, in like an arm triangle. He had his head pinched between his thighs, and he couldn't even get him to tap from any form of arm triangle, arm bar, none of that. Joe Piper wasn't gonna tap to no one. Joe gets it done here, and honestly, you know, Paulo Costa at 13 could be a great name. The number 12 ranked Roman Dolidze. Dare I even say the number 11th ranked Jared Cannonier. Anyone in that 11 to 15 range, let's give to Joe Piper. I think he has earned it. As for Abus, you know, there's a lot of guys. There's Andre Moons. Let's go Edmund Shahbazyan. I really like an Edmund Shahbazyan fight. I could see that taking place. I could also see them giving the loser of Marvin Vettori. And I know Marvin Vettori's fighting someone. Who is it? Who is Marvin Vettori fighting? I swore Marvin Vettori had a fight booked for later in the year, and now I can't remember who it is. Oh, it's Bruno Ferro. The loser of Bruno Ferro and Marvin Vettori, I think, could be another option. I don't know, but Abus, you gotta lock it together, buddy, because Joe Piper just done you dirty. Good work to Joe Piper. Very happy, and I picked him, and he did it. And oh yeah, I was super buzzing when that took place. After that, featherweight division, Yusuf Zalal and Josh Emmett, and I was expecting a war. I was expecting some competitiveness, but no, Yusuf Zalal lands a takedown, is able to link in an armbar from back control, and submits Josh Emmett in a minute and 38 seconds. He's out of there. Yeah. Yusuf Zalal making it look easy. The winning streak's at 8. He's 5-0 since returning to the UFC. This is his fourth submission in that 5-0 streak, and his second win of 2025. Yeah. Yusuf Zalal, good work. And the funny thing is he said, if I go out there and I submit Josh Emmett, I should be in title shot category, you know, talk. And I'm going to be honest, Yusuf Zalal is going to be ranked number 8 minimum. I'd move him up to 7 or 6. And I think we can throw him in the mix. I think we can throw Yusuf Zalal's name in there with Mosvar Evlov, Diego Lopez, Leroy Murphy, Yair Rodriguez. And when I say that last name, Yair Rodriguez, I would love to see that next. Yair Rodriguez versus Yusuf Zalal, because clearly, Yusuf Zalal is talented. When he left the UFC, did you know that he was 11-5? He has since gone 7-0. Actually, he was 10-5. I forgot. The winning streak's at 8 right now. Like, this kid has completely turned his entire career around and just got the biggest win of his career. Good work to Yusuf Zalal. I cannot wait to see what you do next, whether it's Yair, whether it's Aljamain Sterling, Leroy Murphy. Tons of options for you. Yeah, this guy is now in the mix at featherweight. As for Josh Emmett, poor Josh Emmett. Two-fight losing streak. 0-2 in 2025. Last win was December 2023. He's 1-4 in his last five. He's washed. He's also 40. I don't know. I don't really know what's next for Josh Emmett. Does he take on Gene Silva? Does he take on the winner of Steve Garcia and David Onama? I don't know what to do with Josh Emmett. If anything, I think maybe he tries to line up a big fight for retirement. You know, maybe one last go against, I don't even know, guys. Going to be honest, there is limited options for Josh Emmett. I think a Gene Silva fight is the perfect next fight because Gene Silva is clearly top 10 worthy. But yeah, getting some in like this at this stage, just not looking look. Not good look. But I do got to say, Yusuf Zalal, hungry for the finish, knew what he wanted, went out there and did it. Props to him. 10 out of 10 performance for Yusuf Zalal. Good work, my boy. Next up was, might be my favorite fight of the year. I think it's up there. it's up there. And it definitely is the comeback of the year as Jiří Procházka, down two rounds, comes back to knock out Khalil Rountree Jr. cold in round number three. I mean, this was insane. This was insane. Round one and two, pretty slimmer rounds. Just these two going at each other. Khalil just outlanding him a bit more, 15-12 in round one, 24-12 in round two. And Jiří still getting some shots in, eating some clean shots, showing some good head movement. But then round three, Jiří Procházka, maybe a mythical fighter, as he's gone 2-0 in 2024, and he's managed to get two performance bonuses along the way. 2025, for goodness sakes, I'm stuttering. I can't believe how insane this was. I mean, out of nowhere, Jiří Procházka just enters the flow state. He's just eating shots, dodging shots, clipping Khalil. Eventually, they're up against the cage. He's just swinging, hits him with a beautiful hook, clips him, and Khalil just goes arms straight, falls face flat down, and oh my goodness, Jiří Procházka gets it done. Two wins in 2023. This is insane. Two wins in 2024, my goodness, I keep saying 2025, I can't even say the right year. Two knockouts in 2025, both of them in round number three, both of them coming at the 3 minute and 1 second for Jamal, 3 minutes and 4 seconds for Khalil Rountree Jr. Is that not insane? If you ask me, that is wild. This was such a good win for Jiří. He improves to 32-5, and that's right. This is his, I think it's 28th career knockout or something. It's ridiculous. Jiří is one of a kind. As for Khalil, you know, hey, 1-2 in your last three. I mean, dude is clearly built for this. Khalil is clearly built for the top of the division. But man, once round three hit, his cardio took a dip. I mean, Jiří brings out the best of you. Saw the same thing with Jamal Hill. You know, if your cardio starts to go, usually, you know, you're about to get knocked out by Jiří Procházka. So great work for Jiří. He's currently ranked now in the light heavyweight division at number 2. I predict that he will remain there, being that they're probably not going to put him past Magomed, but I don't know. We're going to talk about the main event before we talk about what's next for him. As about what's next for Khalil Rountree Jr., there's a couple fights taking place soon. There's Tyan Bilovich and Bogdan Guskov. There's also Alexander Rakic and Osmat Mirzakhanov. And I think out of the winner of both of those, just choosing between them, he could fight the winner of those. He could also fight Dominic Reyes. I don't really want to see that because I think he would knock Dominic Reyes out. But yeah, I definitely would really like to see Bogdan Guskov, if he gets past Jan Blachowicz, take on Khalil. I would also like to see Osmat, if he gets past Rakic, take on Khalil, or even just Alexander Rakic in general. But this was comeback of the year for me right now. I've been struggling to think of a comeback of the year pick, and being down two rounds with 2 minutes left getting the knockout, I think that warrants comeback of the year vibes. Good job to Jiří Procházka. Gosh, easily one of my favorite fighters. I think he's my number 2 favorite fighter, remembering to the YouTube video that I did where we actually found out what my favorite UFC fighter was. With that, we get to the co-main event. The number 3 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, Mehrab Dovizioglu. His legend grows. His legend grows as he gets his 14th consecutive win. I think it's 14. I think coming in, he was at 13. Let's count it out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. This was his 14th win. And the man did it again. Did again, an insane performance over Corey Sandhagen. So, crazy enough, loses round one. Corey Sandhagen outstrikes him 27-11, defends 3 takedowns, is only taken down once. Sandhagen wins round number one, and we're all kind of going, okay, Sandhagen, interesting enough. He then proceeded to go on an insane 4-round run of just pure domination of Corey Sandhagen. He landed 20 takedowns throughout this fight, which is a UFC fight record. He almost knocked out Corey Sandhagen round two. By the way, round two, Mehrab is probably one of the scariest fighters ever. 33 significant strikes to 2, 73 total strikes to 23, 8 of 13 on takedowns. I mean, Corey Sandhagen was drowning. I mean, Mehrab unofficially didn't drop him, but basically he almost knocked out Sandhagen in round two. The ref could have easily stepped in. I know Mark Goddard was itching too, but he let it go on. Round three comes around, 3 more takedowns from Mehrab. Round four comes around, 2 more from Mehrab. Round five, the toughest round to be in against Mehrab. He goes 6 of 8 on takedowns, outstrikes him 61-23. Final totals for the fight, 114 total strikes, significant strikes to 80 for Merab, 243 total strikes to 149 for Sanhagen. And yeah, 20 of 37 on takedowns. Merab Dovizioso gets it done to no one's surprise. But, you know, Sanhagen can walk away saying that he wasn't finished. He's able to defend 17 takedowns, and he won round one over Merab Dovizioso. So we have to look at some positives for Sanhagen here. But yeah, Merab is him, man. Merab, fighter of the year. It's locked up. 3-0 in 2025. He already wants to main event the final pay-per-view in December, which if he does that, he's fighter of the decade. Oh my goodness. Like, dude, that would be crazy. But he improves to 21-4, and this was dominant all the way around. So what's next for him? That's the main question. So he's currently ranked number 3 pound for pound. I would honestly put him ahead of Islam for now at 2. I don't know if I want to do ahead of Ia Topura, but as of right now, I think we can all agree Merab, Islam, and Ia Topura are all kind of interchangeable for the top 3 pound for pound, but I would love to see him be put at number 1 for now. I just like whenever one of them wins, they just rotate over the other. They just keep going like that. So what's next for him? It's Petr Yan. Number 3 ranked Petr Yan. There is legit no one else. There's no one else for him to fight. The only next potential opponent after Petr Yan would be the winner of Mario Bautista and Umar Nurmagomedov. So it's not really crazy. The state of the bantamweight division, Merab is just doing incredible things, and I'm excited to see what's next for him. But yeah, maybe he'll be main evented the December card against Petr Yan. I kind of hope not, but yeah, Merab is locked up fighter of the year. I don't even know what someone else can do. I know if Islam Makhachev wins and becomes double champ and ties Anderson Silva's winning streak, I still am not going to put him as fighter of the year over Merab, because what Merab has done is gone out and beaten the number 2 guy, the number 1 guy, and now, as of late, the number 4 guy. So can't really put it past that for being fighter of the year. As for Sanhagen, I mean, you know, it's tough. It's tough, but the good news is your next fight will probably be a fight night main event against Sean O'Malley. I think it's time to do that dream fight. They are both 1-2. Actually, I think Sean O'Malley's on a 2-fight losing streak to Merab, so 0-2 against a guy who's 1-2, I think that's a perfect thing to do. You know, so let's run that next fight night main event in 2026. Sean O'Malley, Corey Sanhagen. Perfectly writes itself. But yes, Merab against Petr Yan. Will it be early 2026? Will it be in December? I don't know, but Merab is easily one of the best fighters on the planet. With that, we get to the main event. And, you know, I picked Magomed. Wasn't really mad that he lost, but I will say how quickly this ended was so underwhelming to me, if you ask me. I mean, this was just as simple as Alex Pereira's just pounding on Magomed Nalaev, you know, piecing him up. He then clips him with, I think it was an overhand or whatever. Magomed shoots an awful takedown attempt, reminiscent of Jiří Procházka in 2023. And Alex Pereira just starts pounding on elbows of him while he's in afghard. And eventually, Herb Dean let this go as long as he could. It got to a point where it's legit just like, okay, Magomed's just going to have an irreversible head damage. And minute 20 seconds in, Alex Pereira is once again light heavyweight champion. I mean, this was so easy. So freaking easy for him. I have no words. I really have no words. It's clear that this fight earlier in the year in March was a fluke. It really was. I mean, Pereira regains the light heavyweight belt, gets a performance bonus, domination. And Magomed Ankalaev, his, 12-fight winning streak, 13-fight winning streak, is snapped crazy enough. Yeah, Pereira gets it done. Didn't even need an official knockdown. Just needed to TKO him, gets it done, 80 seconds, boom, bang, done. Easy money for Alex Pereira. And yeah, after starting off the year rough, ends the year on a high, that's what you gotta do when you're at his status. So what's next for these guys? Well, the light heavyweight division's at an odd spot. Certainly is, because Alex Pereira is really not going back to his ways of defending the belt. He just really is. And he's not going to fight Jiří a third time. He's not going to fight Carlos Ulberg. No. Alex Pereira is going to do one thing and one thing only, and he's going to be the second title defense for Tom Aspinall. That is right. Whether God upsets Aspinall, whether Aspinall starches through God like we think he does at the end of this month in October, Alex Pereira should take on the winner in a super fight in 2026. I think everyone can agree. I think that's what should take place. I don't need to see Alex Pereira at light heavyweight again. I really don't. And as of right now, we have two number one contenders in Jiří Procházka and Carlos Ulberg. Interim belt, or actually not even interim, the next champion. They can fight for the vacant belt in 2026, and the division can move on. And we can get Alex Pereira attempting to go for his third weight class belt I think that's easily what you need to do here. I mean, he became one of the, I think it's one of only five fighters now, including him, to lose the belt and regain it, to become a two-time champion in the same division. And yeah, that's what I think we should do next, as what Magomed Ankalaev should do next. Well, he could fight Khalil Roundtree Jr. He could fight Jamal Hill. I don't even know. Magomed, I've heard people say we should trade Magomed Ankalaev for Paul Hughes in the PFL. And honestly, that would be a good decision. Magomed has left little to be desired. I think he's kind of just completely ruined his entire career just from like this entire saga with Alex Barrow, which is crazy to think about. And I think it's time to move on from him. I just think that's the point we've gotten to. And yeah, the next era is going to be Jirian Ulberg fighting for the vacant belt. And I think Alex Barrow fighting Tom Aspinall at heavyweight for the heavyweight championship, which that fight could main event. I know it wouldn't make sense for that to main event the White House card, a Brazilian and a Brit. But I mean, come on, would that not be insane if you ask me? I don't know, but yeah, Alex Barrow finishes Magomed with ease. Good work to him. But yeah, if he does stay, it's just Carlos Ulberg. It's just Carlos Ulberg is next because he's already beaten Jiri twice handsomely, and Ulberg's on a 9-fight winning streak. So I think moving him up is the correct move. But with that, we move on. From 320, and October moves along, and October has the current state to be the best month of MMA, best month of UFC, I could even say, of the year. As we head to Rio next week, Charles Oliveira, but too scared about it. You get Charles Oliveira main eventing a fight night. When was the last time that happened? Last time he main evented a fight night was 5 years ago. Last time he wasn't on a pay-per-view, 5 years ago. Wow. Been a while. You also have Devison Figueiredo against Montel Jackson, Vicente Luque and Juan Alvarez. Oh, yeah. You also have Mario Pinto in action. You get Conn Offaly coming back to the UFC. Vitor Petrito makes his second appearance at heavyweight. The women's bantamweight debut of Bia Mesquita, Walter Walker, and Mohamed Usman. This card is going to be loads of fun. But we'll talk about that on the next episode of the podcast. As with that, we have concluded. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't believe I even toughed this out for over 90 minutes, dude. My freaking nose and throat are killing me, guys. It is rough being sick, but you know what? We're going to push through before we move to Chicago this Friday. That's right. I'm only in Minnesota for 4 more days. Crazy enough. But yeah, lots of crazy stuff in the UFC with UFC 320 and the UFC Qatar card being announced. NFL Week 5 was crazy. And this upcoming episode of Davis Quintero Series, I got a feeling it's going to be a banger. Some tells me we're going to see some future rank contenders going to battle on this episode. Something's just telling me that. But hey, we'll recap this all on the next episode, ladies and gentlemen. And everyone have an amazing week. Just do whatever you do best in life. And you already know the spiel. I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.